This podcast is produced by the Center for Deployment Psychology at the Uniformed Services University of the Health Sciences. The views expressed are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the Uniformed Services University, the Department of Defense, or the U.S. government. In addition, references to any specific companies, products, processes, or services does not necessarily constitute or imply endorsement by the Uniformed Services University, the Department of Defense, or the U.S. government. Welcome to CDP's podcast, Practical for Your Practice,
where we give you actionable intel to support what you do, one colleague to another.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Practical for Your Practice. We are so excited today. I'm Dr. Kevin Holloway, joined by both of the other hosts for this podcast, Dr. Corinne Lefkowitz.
Woohoo!
And Dr. Jenna Ermold.
Woo-hoo!
Welcome, both of you. Wow, we got the woohoo girls today.
It's actually just woo girls.
Just woo girls. Well, it is woo because today is this anticipated live episode that we've been waiting for all season long. We've never done this before, where we're taking calls from listeners and emails and voicemails and all of that. And we've got a few that have come in that we're going to read in the episode in response to them. But also, I just got notification from our producers that our first caller's already here.
That's where you're supposed to go, woo. Let's let
woo!
Her
woo! Okay. Yeah, there woo! You go.
Well, I'm just thinking like this is either going to go really, really well.
Right.
Or moderately well. These are our two options.
I pick A. It's going to be, as the kids say, fire.
Be optimistic.
If I may use a hip term that my teenagers would roll their eyes that I just used. This episode is going to be fire. I'm really excited.
I feel younger already.
I'm wanting to let this first caller in. Let's get this thing started. Shall we do it?
Well, here we go. Let me bring her in. Hello, we have Erin from Indianapolis on the line. Hi, Erin.
Hi, Kevin.
How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing great. So for all of our listeners, this is Dr. Erin Frick. She's one of our colleagues, and she's fantastic. We're so happy to have you on the show, Erin.
Yeah, thanks for calling in, Erin. It's Jenna.
Yeah. Hi, Jenna. I'm so glad I was able to make some time. I love the podcast. I consider myself the president of your fan club. So
are there t-shirts
to call in? I'm working on that.
Well, that's funny
because I should have that to you soon.
I was gonna say we need to send you merch as our president. You know, we'll quickly have to create some merch and send it to you.
Right.
That sounds amazing.
Thank you for listening and being a good supporter.
Absolutely.
So Erin, do you have a question or a comment or something for us?
Yeah, I was listening back to the episode that kicked off the season, the What's Your Why? Mm. And Kevin, you had mentioned, I think you said it was Tobler's Law. I don't know if you want to mention that again in case I'm getting the name wrong.
Yeah, so it's Tobler's Law. It's actually a law of geography, if you can believe it. And it says that everything is related to everything else, but nearer things are more related than distant things.
I think that's what you said. At least that's what I think I wrote down. I just had never heard it before. But when you were talking about that and then hearing Jenna's story and Corinne's stories, it felt like I could relate to it so much because I feel like getting into this field of behavioral health was all very kind of like a fate or a luck type of thing. Like it wasn't something that I was searching out for. But now when I look back, it's like, absolutely, this is where I was going to end up. And so it was just really interesting to hear your stories and to see that a lot of us maybe didn't plan this to be where we land, but we ended up here and it's such a good fit.
That's really interesting. So I think, thank you for sharing that, first of all. I appreciate that because I think when we started that notion, we started that theme, we knew that we had winding paths, but we didn't know what everybody else was going to say when we had guests on the episode. And then, at least for me, I've heard from a couple of our former guests, them saying the same thing, that it was funny that where they ended up is not where they intended to be. And they were surprised that they weren't the only one.
Yeah. And I think that's an important message, especially for maybe some of our listeners who might be a little earlier in their career. If it feels kind of windy and bumpy, like you're doing it right. Like that's kind of what everybody has. Erin, we're actually wondering, would you be willing to share what your why is with us while we have you?
What is your why?
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Yeah. So again, didn't think about it at the time, But when I was in high school, you know how they do those silly senior year, you're labeled a thing, you know, the best of this or this, you know, stand out in that or whatever. Well, 100%. I was named Dear Abby.
Wow.
Right?
I could like totally see that.
Yep, totally. Dear Erin.
That should have been a sign, right? Like I should have taken that and been like, I need to go into psychology or counseling, but no, I did not. I started off my undergrad doing more of the pre-med route. And so it's just funny for me to think back of like other people clearly saw something in me that I had no clue of at the time. But yeah, I got super creeped out with doing like the animal dissections in college.
That's where
they lost me. I was like, yeah, this doesn't feel right. I don't want to keep doing this.
These are not my people.
And just, right? Right? I had the empathy for these animals, even though they had already, you know, obviously passed away. But I was like, it just doesn't feel right to be doing this. And happened to be the same semester I was taking my very first psychology class, and got bit by the bug for sure. And mm-hmm. it was pretty clear that that was the path I was meant to be on, which was really cool.
And I love that you say that you were taking those, like, I guess maybe aptitude kind of tests or whatever in high school, like which career paths, you know, are you suited for or something.
Jenna's
looking, shaking her head no.
No, that's not what Erin said.
Yeah, you're
that's
not
fine.
Listening.
You're a terrible listener. You should think about a different thing.
No, I thought you did say that.
No, she was
this
saying, you know how you get voted. Like I was most likely to be Ariel in The Little Mermaid 2, which is a really bizarre one. So that she was saying, because I could sing it just like Ariel.
So Kevin's not a good listener and should never be a therapist, really.
So let's put you back in MI so that you can actually work on
your computer science background. That's what
right. I'm going to go back to my cubicle and write code. So,
Corinne, what were you voted? I need to know what everybody else was voted now.
I know, right?
You're going to, I wasn't voted anything, first of all, because I tried to hide like under the radar, but I was nominated for Best Sense of Humor.
Shocking.
Yeah, terrible.
Kevin, were you voted
face.
Most likely not to listen?
What? No, I don't think I got voted for anything, believe it or not. I don't.
What?
I wasn't. I mean, not everybody got a title.
You so. For something.
What would you vote for me,
behind
Erin?
The scenes, that's going to need to happen.
That goes on the next merch.
I would have said most supportive, but then you didn't listen. So I've got to come up with a second one.
Right.
No one's going to call in now after hearing this because they're going to be like, Kevin's not going to listen anyway. So who cares?
Yeah. Well, we just won't. We'll exclude Kevin from the rest of the discussion. Okay. That's fine.
I'm out.
But
no,
I want to say,
don't do that.
Not only do I want to thank Erin, thank you, Erin, for calling in and supporting the podcast, but I also appreciate you sharing your What's Your Why story because, you know, I've known you for 10 years and I would have assumed you were always going to be a psychologist. Yeah. So it's really cool to hear that you had a windy path too.
I'm curious, if we put up a poll, like how many of our listeners would say they had kind of a windy, unexpected path? Like maybe we even should consider doing that.
Yeah, that's a good idea on our Facebook.
Yeah.
That'd be pretty cool.
Erin, I'm going to forever now call you Dear Erin instead of Dear Abby Erin. But yeah, thank you so much for taking the time to call in. We appreciate you. And I can say personally, I am so glad that your path led to behavioral health and even more glad that your path led to military behavioral health and the CDP because you are a gem.
Oh, thank you all so much. I'm glad I got a chance to talk with you today and I hope the rest of the episode goes really well.
Thanks
you.
Karen.
You're awesome.
Take care. Right. Bye.
Bye.
Aptitude tests.
I was going to be nice and just let it go. Jenna's like, no, what? You idiot.
Right. Thank you. I thought that's what she said. Okay.
But I honestly think that was fun and that should stay in.
Funny.
Honestly.
Okay. Let's see how much content we have.
You should edit.
I wasn't listening, so it doesn't matter.
You're actually usually a really good listener, Kevin.
That was fantastic. Okay, but we also have a letter from somebody else, another listener, and this is somebody that's not known to us. So, like, Erin is a colleague and a dear friend, and we love her for calling in. But we also have some listeners that we haven't met before. So, I mean, Corinne, you have a letter from one of our listeners, right?
I do. I have
an
email.
I mean, is it?
It's
it's an email.
She sent us a letter. Imagine that she sat down with a fountain pen and engaged in some calligraphy.
Delivered it to your house.
Some beautiful calligraphy to share her thoughts. No.
Did one of those wax seals on the envelope?
Yeah. No, we have an email that came in, which also, by the way, this person did not reference what episode they were talking about, but I think it's actually the episode that just posted, which is kind of cool. It's nice to get that like really immediate feedback because we don't always know that anybody's listening or engaged in it. So it's really neat to get an email so quickly to get some feedback. So I'm going to read this email. I want you all to be patient because I'm going to read two parts of it. Some of it is complimentary and some of it raises a concern. And I want to actually talk about both of it. So I'm going to read the whole thing. It is, or a part of it. This comes from Madeline.
Okay.
And she says, "Good morning. I'm reaching out because I listened to the CDP podcast this week and I was blown away.
Oh, nice.
I'm the trauma program manager at my clinic. So working with military, veteran, and other adult clients who have both trauma and substance use disorder is my jam." Mm-hmm. Love it. And I also have a small private practice caseload focusing on the same. I also believe motivational interviewing is fundamental to working with this population. And I was nerdily excited to hear a shout out for the ASAM, which, if you don't know, is the American Society of Addiction Medicine, the ASAM criteria. So I want to share the podcast on LinkedIn. It's not on your website yet. I'll keep an eye out. So that's the first part of her email, which I definitely want to talk about.
So that's
about.
Like fresh.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It just came in. But before we jump in, the second piece that I want to read, a couple of other items while I'm at it. I genuinely hope that you all can open up to considering LPCs just as capable as social workers and psychologists to work with military and veteran populations.
Mm.
There's really not an evidence-based reason for maintaining that divide, and you're just effectively excluding some very competent professionals.
Oh, yeah.
Really good point that I want to talk about.
Yeah. Well, can I just react to, I love the creation of the word nerdily. That's like my favorite thing in this email.
I like that it's her
I can apply that to my life.
Yeah. I like this Madeline. I like
absolutely.
Her
we're nerdily all the time.
Well, so I mean, maybe can I respond to like her second point about LPCs?
Please. Yeah. And
we were thinking about this a little bit before we started recording too, because this is such a good point, and we weren't 100% sure, like what
the context.
The context in a way, because as I understand it, for a long time, LPCs were not typically hired by the DOD. It was usually psychologists and social workers that were working in military clinics and hospitals. And
I'm not
LPCs,
sure about VA. VA might be similar.
VA might be similar. And maybe if somebody knows, they can write us an email and clarify for us. And it's my understanding that LPCs are now beginning to be hired in the DOD into the MTFs, the military treatment facilities, into mental health clinics, which is fantastic news, because 100% agree that LPCs are just as capable and really, we know really fantastic LPCs. And so we're on the same page there. We agree 100%. So that's one way, one context that question could come in. And so 100% agree with you, Madeline. LPCs are fantastic, and we really are applauding the inclusion of LPCs these days in the DOD. But there's other contexts too. So Corinne,
I was just thinking, I wanted to add to that it, just in the sense that we know this to be true because we have LPCs in our workshops all the time and in consultation all the time.
Absolutely.
And so we agree they are quite competent and absolutely have a lot to offer and deserve a seat at the table.
Yeah. I guess one of the other contexts we thought maybe the question was in was perhaps the way that we've talked in our previous episodes suggests that the only people we're talking to are psychologists and social workers. And so if that's the case and we're unaware of that, then we apologize. That is not our intent at all.
For sure.
Absolutely. We appreciate that. So we're going to try to be more intentionally inclusive. Because we agree with you, Madeline, like LPCs are fantastic, and they're part of, in my mind, the mental health family, if you will, that's in the DoD and the VA and outside of it, and hopefully are part of the listener group for the podcast too. We're talking to you too, so we're happy to have you. So
I could totally say that. Oh, sorry.
I was just gonna say I also love that Madeline found a way to, like, despite some of these barriers and challenges, found a way to contribute to the mission. It sounds
totally.
Like, you know, she's really committed to working with military connected clients. So a shout out for that. The only other small piece I thought of that we're trying to figure out all the context. Like, I know for example, for CDP Presents, which is our webinar series, we only offer American Psychological Association CEs because of certain reasons why we have to do that for our free webinar. But I know CDP also works pretty hard to try and make sure that other disciplines are covered in terms of their continuing education credit. So I'm hoping that we are doing that effectively as well. So we're definitely trying to read all the tea leaves here and cover all the
right.
all the bases. But the bottom line, Madeline, is we're glad you're part of the behavioral health family working with military connected clients. And thank you again for listening to the podcast.
And
for sure.
Really love the feedback. Yeah.
That's the one thing that I wanted to say, that I could absolutely see, back to Kevin's point, that sometimes in our discussion, I default to saying psychologist just because I'm a psychologist. And it's easier to say that than it is to say, and chaplains and social workers and LPCs and interns and students and marriage. But those are all part of the behavioral health provider family. So I personally am going to get better at saying provider instead of psychologist, just because I shouldn't do that just because it's easier for me.
Yeah.
I think that this was very similar to how we used to always say, like, service members, veterans, and family members, and like independence, and like there was this list. And so we kind of came up with military connected clients, and that sort of was this umbrella term. And I feel like we probably need to be better with saying behavioral health providers.
Yeah.
Okay.
What was the episode? The negative feedback, right? What are the, I shouldn't say negative feedback, the concern, which was valid concern.
Very constructive.
But I want to come back to what she was saying about the actual episode, which I'm thinking it was probably Mark Campanile's episode that just posted, which is meeting clients where they are, EBPs in dual diagnosis cases. And that was one that I was really excited about because he's from my alma mater, so to speak, the Philadelphia VA. So I'm assuming it's from that one.
And that was a great episode. By the time you all are hearing this, because we're not broadcasting it live, I think this is the last episode of our season. And so we're recording this like the day after Mark Campanile's episode dropped. So that's the context for that. But it's episode 8 of season 5, if you all want to go to check that. And it was a fabulous discussion. I really loved his insights on working with, we said dual diagnosis clients, because I guess to some of us, that means, you know, they have a mental health diagnosis and a substance use disorder diagnosis at the same time. And, you know, like we said in that episode, a lot of us aren't necessarily trained in what to do in those circumstances. Yeah. And so he was talking a lot about, like Madeline referenced, motivational interviewing in working with folks that way, using a lot of the same evidence-based psychotherapies we talk about on the podcast here and that we teach at CDP, but also incorporating concurrent treatment for those substance use disorders that sometimes includes medication-assisted therapy. So
thank you, Madeline, for the email and the feedback. We hopefully, as obvious, we really do appreciate it. And it was, as I said, very cool to get some immediate feedback from an episode that just posted yesterday.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. We actually have another question from Tom. And Tom asks, you all talk about EBPs all the time, which seem to be very rigid protocols that rely on clients having a very specific presentation. Many of my clients seem to be pretty unique, or at least don't fit the mold of an ideal EBP client. What would you say to providers who would like to do EBPs more, but feel like they aren't a good fit in the real world?
Tom's coming in with a hard-hitting question.
He is. And I think one that we hear a lot in our trainings for the various EBPs, even if they are kind of diagnosis-specific EBPs. It's funny, the very first thing that comes to mind when I hear this, there's a lot of directions I want to go. I want to go with the word rigid. I want to go with unique. I want to go with, you know, fitting the mold. But I guess I'll start with, because it's fresh in my mind, I just attended a unified protocol training the other week, CDP has started to offer a unified protocol through a collaboration that we have with a trainer that whose name is eluding me, Kevin. I don't know if you remember.
Look it up.
Okay.
This is, I mean, this is work by David Barlow et al., right?
Yes.
So this is Unified Protocol for Transdiagnostic Treatment of Emotional Disorders. So it's kind of like the full name of the protocol. But yeah, go ahead.
And I was just going to say, I was so, I really enjoyed the training, and could really see the utility, I feel like, for some clients that Tom might be describing, where they're not sort of fitting in a specific category, but have behaviors or things they do that are really impacting their functioning and could use sort of a more global approach that I feel like the Unified Protocol offered. And just wanted to mention that as something that maybe Tom could pursue. But Dr. Elizabeth Eustace, thank you, was the trainer who did that. And we have some Unified Protocol trainings coming up.
Yep. And these
in
are
the next
just
year.
Just to let folks know, these are trainers that are part of the Unified Protocol Institute that are contracting with us to be able to provide those through CDP. But it's the same training you would get from them too. So just wanted to make folks aware of that.
I like Tom's question as well, because it fits in with kind of how I think about teaching some of these protocols. So the protocols that I teach are very specific and diagnosis specific, like cognitive processing therapy for PTSD or CBT for insomnia. So they are very, very specific. And the clients who are sitting in front of me are not usually just presenting with one issue.
Absolutely.
So I fully agree with Tom.
That's more the exception than the
correct.
Yeah.
Correct. Right. And so one thing that comes to mind that I always say in a workshop is the protocols that I'm teaching should be flexible and should be modified for the client who's sitting in front of you. However, as with anything, I think it's often helpful to learn the protocol the way that it was written, the way that it was intended
right.
to be delivered the first few times that you're doing it. So if possible, you know, trying to deliver it to somebody who's maybe has less complex needs, right? So that you can deliver the protocol as it's written. Because as with anything, you need to learn the rules before you figure out which ones you can break,
right?
Or which ones
exactly.
you can modify. And so I find that a helpful way to think about it, that I really encourage people to try to deliver the treatment as it's written first, so that it actually becomes more intuitive on how to make modifications. And the other piece is that all of these protocols are designed to be short term, right? So just because I'm treating
right.
somebody for PTSD, let's say, and I'm intending to do this 3 months worth of CPT, I'm sure that they have other issues that I will want to address. I just might wait until CPT is done before I address some of those other issues. So it's never intended to be a one size fits all.
Yeah.
I think that's a really important point, Corinne. And I feel like an analogy I often kind of think about with that is, if I have high blood pressure and high cholesterol and I don't know what some other health problem, you know, treating the high blood pressure is really important, right? Like if I can get the high blood pressure down, that might actually have an effect on you know, something else that's going on for me. And I think that's that piece of, like, if I can get the PTSD symptoms down, then I'm going to have the wherewithal to be able to address some of the other things going on in my life. And it doesn't mean therapy is done. And I think the other piece of that we hear all the time is this unique word. Like, my client is unique, and John, Tom, I'm not saying your client isn't unique, but
right.
I think many of us come in thinking like, this protocol isn't going to work for my client because XYZ, or they have all these things going on. And until you sort of actually lean in and try it and get consultation and see the benefits, like, that's really the best way around that too, because yes, every client we work with is unique, but at the same time, we have some of these evidence-based therapies that really can take back a ton of their territory that they've lost, whatever, you know, symptoms that they have.
I guess the way I think about it too is it might be a difference in what we mean by protocols, right? Like very, very early on when we were trying to come up with protocol therapies, we were the purpose was, hey, we've noticed that some therapists are more effective than others, right? Some therapists get better results than others. And like, if we can package what it is they're doing, if we can figure out what that is and have other therapists do that, then across the board, we improve outcomes. And so early protocols were things that were incredibly rigid, like read this script to them, hand them this form, check this box on the list. And it was very, very prescripted, regardless of what the client was bringing to the room. And so, you know, first pass at trying to distill what were the effective pieces of, you know, effective therapist work. But in the meantime, like the protocols of today are quite a bit different in my mind. And I kind of think of the protocols of today as more of like scaffolding, or, you know, kind of like, I don't know, like the bones, if you will, where all of the individual idiosyncratic, personal, individualized stuff gets hung on that. And it is very, very personalized, even though we have a protocol. So the protocol provides the structure, but really the content, the substance of what is going on in there is incredibly individualized to a client. And so a client who is just straightforward, single discrete trauma, for example, being treated with CPT, you know, learning CPT is still as effective when we're thinking about the client who has multiple traumas across their life and they're dealing with sleep problems and they've got substance use on board. And because we're working on the PTSD part of it with that therapy, like Jenna was saying, right, there's still other things that we may need to also treat, whether it's concurrently or serially or whatever. But especially when it comes to that person's experience with trauma, whether that is one single discrete or, you know, full lifetime of it, we're able to really take their individual experience and incorporate it into that structure, because the structure just provides, like, here's how we're going to approach it, but the work we're going to do is very individualized with what that person's bringing into the office. So, you know, I don't think Tom necessarily is saying like, hey, you know, all protocols of today are check these box, read this script necessarily, but there's kind of that impression, I think, from earlier versions of protocols, that protocol therapy is so rigid and you can't address, you know, the individualized things that are coming into the room, but you really can. Like, the protocols of today are built to do that, and not just allow for it, but to leverage that, to really work from that.
Yeah, true. I mean, I think it's, I'm really glad that, you know, Tom asked that question, because, or made that observation and comment, because I would like to foot stomp. It is something we hear a lot. Like,
yes,
you're not alone.
Right.
So, you know, that can, come up for lots of providers. And I do think one of the things that helps with that feeling is accessing consultation.
Yes.
You know, saying like, okay, here's this specific client. Here's why I think this EBP is not going to work or would be too rigid. And then allow those, you know, consultants to help pull apart. Like, is that, you know, what about that is really, you know, maybe a concern, or where is there some, you know, kind of beliefs coming in from the provider that we can work with that maybe aren't consistent.
I the more that we talk about it, the more thoughts and reactions I'm having to that question from Tom, which is a great question. Because I think that this sort of concern that he's bringing up is actually a strength. It's a good thing. When, if as a clinician, you're thinking, well, what are the particulars of the client who's sitting in front of me? What are their particular needs that are unique to them or that make them different from the client that I saw the hour before? That's actually a really great thing. That's what we want to be doing. It speaks to case conceptualization, which should be at the core of what we're doing as providers.
And careful assessment as part of it.
Careful assessment, right? Yep. And we should be thinking about, all right, I have these tools in my toolbox. I have CPT, I have PE, I have CBTI, I have the unified protocol. I have these tools. I'm not just going to throw one at the client or make the client fit into a box. I'm going to think about, okay, based on who this person is, what do they need? What are the key components that need to be addressed? What treatment might work best for this guy? And let me talk with them about what they want to address first, what's most important to them. So Tom's question, actually, I think is a good reminder that that is what we should be doing. It is how we should be functioning as providers.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So thank you. So thank you, Tom. That was a great point, a great question, and definitely something that we think about a lot in training and consultation.
I love the questions that are coming that are, you know, not just, not, I don't know, not that we deserve this necessarily, but they're not just saying, you guys are great. Because, you know, these are the tough questions I think that the providers are thinking about and concerned about. I mean, from our very first one that we started the episode with to this, people are kind of challenging us even on the notion of what it is that we're even doing in this podcast. And I love that, because I love being able to talk about this stuff.
Should we
pick another
look at another message?
Yeah.
And talk about it.
All right. Okay.
So let's see. This is kind of somewhat similar. Janelle from Katy. I don't know where that is, but
Think there's a
Janelle.
Katy, Texas. So there, yeah.
Yeah, Katy, Texas. Okay.
Well, Janelle from somewhere named Katy, perhaps in Texas, says, I'd love to hear more about comorbidities and how you might mix or combine EBPs to treat them. Maybe talk about that on a future episode, she suggests, which, I love when listeners suggest what we should talk about and give us ideas.
For sure.
But
What's
coming
your
back,
immediate reaction to that, Bryn?
I'd love to hear more about comorbidities. Well, and how you mix or combine EBPs. Ooh, so I have multiple reactions because my knee-jerk reaction is to say, don't mix EBPs,
Right,
don't combine
that's what I was gonna say.
them, which is
Not a cocktail.
also like goes against what I just said in
Right.
response to the previous comment, which is we want to be flexible. But in a lot of ways, I think it carries over from the previous discussion, which is I think it is obviously important to do a good assessment. It is important to conceptualize what are the specific needs that this client has and what treatment might work best for them. What's going to most meet their needs, or what order do we want to address their needs in? Do we take one bef do we address one before the other? The reason why I had the knee-jerk negative reaction is I think there's been a lot of research where researchers have tried to say, well, if PE works and CPT works, for example, what if we combine them into one and
Right.
will that work better? And what tends to be found is that the treatments get very long and very
Right.
complicated and don't end up really adding a lot more, and that the results don't end up any better. And in fact, there's a sense that we might actually weaken the treatment by trying to do too much in a short amount of time.
Yeah.
So that's why I have that knee-jerk reaction. But what do other people think?
Well, I think my reaction is similar that, I was thinking of the same research you were, Corinne, that, combining, even if we're combining EBPs together, and we think we're taking the best parts of all of them, we may also be taking some of the weaker parts of them, that don't place nicely with others. But at best, we don't know, right? Like one of the things that make EBPs EBPs is that we do research on them and we see are they effective as compared to weightless or compared to other active control or active therapies. And so when we come out the end of that, we have, okay, look, when you deliver this therapy this way, this is the likelihood of people getting better. And for all of the EBPs that we've talked about in the podcast or that CDP trains in, the effectiveness data for those therapies is really great. It's really fantastic. And the further that we depart from the protocols as they've been researched, the less we know about how effective it might be. And that's not to say, I mean, going back to the previous question, right, about protocols and being too rigid, I agree that these are very robust protocols and they can tolerate modification. But just like you were saying, Corinne, I agree. It's like you got to know first what you're modifying from. And that means getting experience under your belt, doing the protocol as written, as researched, and then make sure that your modifications are consistent with the underlying theory. And that's part of where I think we get into trouble when we start just mixing and matching and kind of pulling things out of an eclectic bag, is that we may not really be thinking much about are these complementary as far as the underlying theory too, about what it is that's going on under the hood with these disorders. And so, just the further that we'd stray from those protocols, the less we can be confident in how effective they're going to be. And so I agree with you. Like maybe we identify what are those various things we want to treat. We think about them like Jenna was talking about, like we have these various things that we want to approach. What order do we want to do them in? We can approach them with evidence-based therapies for these various things, certainly keeping in mind the complex nature of all of our unique clients. But when we start mixing, I guess, and incorporating pieces of therapies into each other, then we kind of don't know what we're going to get. And at best, and at worst, we might actually be, like you said, making our outcomes worse because we're maybe interfering with or undermining other pieces of, that we stole from another protocol in there too.
And I think the question also, or the suggestion is that we focus on comorbidities. So there are, for
Yes.
example, COPE is looking at PTSD and substance use disorder, and we have DBT-PE, which is
Yes.
addressing both, well, I mean, definitely borderline personality disorder, but or sort of features or behaviors consistent with that and PTSD. So, you know, we definitely, I think, could have some future episodes on, you know, how do you make treatment decisions when you've got a lot of comorbidities on where to go first? What concurrent treatments do we know are most effective? You know, because we know it's not very effective to treat PTSD. If somebody has substance use disorder and PTSD, if you don't treat them both at the same time, or you don't address them both, then neither treatment's going to be very effective. Right. So, you know, I think I feel like I'm a broken record with the consultation piece, but if you're working with a client who has comorbidities and you're not sure about that, you know, we do offer consultation in cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia, for CPT, for PE, you know, so come chat with us and we can help you think this through. But I think that was.
And CBT for suicide prevention too.
Yeah.
We have consultation for that as well.
It would not be an episode of the Practical for Your Practice podcast if we didn't talk about consultation.
Right. I was going to say we should make it a drinking game and then we'd be slurring by the end of the episode. Okay. You want another one?
Yeah.
Sure.
So Hank from Evansville says, and I love that I get to read this one. You all are great.
Yoo-hoo!
Keep up the good work.
Woo! Woo!
Keep up the good work. Private practice can be lonely and it feels like I have colleagues in you all. So it looks like there's not really a question there, but thank Hank. Thanks, Hank.
Thank you.
Thank Hank.
Thank Hank. Appreciate the compliment. And to be honest, that was really kind of the impetus for creating the podcast, or at least that was kind of in our heads what the case scenario is, you know, other providers that we think of you all as colleagues too. We're just having a conversation and perhaps you get to sit in and listen in on a conversation as though we all are colleagues, maybe on your commute into work or while you're cleaning the house or whatever it is that you're doing. You know, so appreciate that comment a lot. That kind of feels like we're maybe getting at what it is that we're trying to accomplish. So thanks, Hank.
As we are wrapping up season 5, which I can't even believe that we were in season 5, and we are about to have our planning meeting to figure out our theme and line up season 6. We are so genuine and we're so glad, you know, those of you who wrote into us, you already gave us a few ideas, but we want to address what's on your mind, what our listeners who are supporting us and we're so grateful for, what do you wish we'd do an episode on? Who do you love, who you'd love to see, you know, hear interviewed? And we're very, very open to suggestions as we're lining that up. So, you know, as we always say, we have our speak pipe, and I'm not reading the speak pipe link because I never can do it. We have our email.
speakpipe.com/CDPP for P.
But we will make sure that we have those links in the show notes that those information in the show notes available. But please don't be strangers. We really would value your input for continuing to address your needs as clinicians. You know, we're colleagues around the water cooler chatting. What do you want to chat about?
And I do mean it when I say that, you know, a lot of times we're putting together this podcast, we're putting together an episode, and we don't know who's listening. We don't know what they think. We don't, we're talking into the black hole. We don't know what feedback, and we really want to know. And we want to know what you as the listener have found interesting, what you want to hear more about, what is going to make you keep tuning in. So we want that feedback, and we don't know unless you tell us.
And like, you know, I hope you kind of got the sense from this episode, like we appreciate even, you know, the feedback that isn't just glowy praise all the time too. Like we want to hear too, like, hey, well, you know, this landed on me differently, or, you know, you guys have been leaving out a section of people or this topic or whatever. Like that's what we want to hear about. We want to hear from you all. Like, what do you want to know more of? So, or even that we got it wrong. If we got it totally wrong, let us know. We're happy to receive that feedback as well.
It was probably Kevin.
But Kevin,
it
was probably me. Yeah, he wasn't listening. He wasn't listening.
My email is jenna.ermold. Okay.
My home phone number is.
Right.
Well, I don't know about you all, but this was a really fabulous and fun experience to, you know, feel like we did get to know our listeners a little better. Appreciate the messages that you sent and the questions that you had and the comments. So what a good time.
Thank you, everybody.
Yeah, thank you for listening, and thank you for giving your feedback
and for all you do to help military connected clients or non-military connected
clients. Right.
Or whoever.
And look forward to season 6 of Practical for Your Practice dropping soon, we hope, and more information coming on our website about that.
And there's still time for you to let us know what our theme should be.
That's right.
Season 6, and we'll be shy. All right. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Practical for Your Practice.
Please feel free to subscribe, like, and share.
Until next time.